from the other tape. It's April 24th, the year 2002. We are on Maseches Megillah, Daf Yudches Omid Aleph 18a. All right?
Right.
We continue right now from where it said in the last words. All right. The question was asked at the beginning of this discussion, not tonight, but a couple of weeks ago. It started actually before Pesach, all right, on the last session that we had, that it mentioned in the previous page that the Shmona Esrei was composed by Shimon HaPakuli in the presence of Rabbi Gamliel. Okay, so the question is, why then is there a conflict between that and the fact that another baraisa which says it wasn't Shimon HaPakuli, but actually the Shmona Esrei goes right back to the days of the Anshei Knesset Hagdola. As it says, 120 Zekanim, in other words, 120 great sages who were members of the Anshei Knesset Hagdola, they were the ones who formulated the brachas of the Shmona Esrei. And this is what we start with tonight, okay? It says, Chimi Achar, okay? Middle of that line in the details. And inasmuch as there were 120 great scholars who were members of the Anshei Knesset Hagdolah, Umehem Kamen Nevi'im, and they included even some of the prophets among them, namely Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, and of course they threw in also Mordechai and some others, Ezra, Nehemiah, you name it, right?
Yeah.
So inasmuch as they were the ones who are the ones who ordained, who arranged the Shmona Esrei brachas al HaSeder, and they arranged it in the order in which it should be said, which is what we were talking about before, you know, trying to find reasons why the brachas follow in the order in which they do. So the question is, Shimon HaPakuli by his theory, so in that case, so what did Shimon HaPakuli do when we said he was the one who arranged the brachas? There's a conflict, right? So the answer they give is Shkachum because of a Sidrum. That as time went on, people forgot the right order of the brachas, and so what happened was that when it became a mess, eventually Shimon HaPakuli came and he once more arranged them in the proper order. Okay, now we have learned before that the Shmona Esrei represents praise of God, correct? We praise Him for this, that, and the other thing, you know, that we're doing. Okay. And if we go back, I'm quoting from the Gemara in Brachas at this particular point, it says that in the first Bracha, the Shmona Esrei, in others, right? What are the adjectives that we use in describing God? Oel, He's God, right? Hagibor, Bahadora, right? Yeah, okay. He's El Elyon. He's Gemel Chasson Tovim, Kodiakov Chasteo Vos, right? Maybe go to David Ehim and Shoviava. Okay. Not only that, but it also says that he is Elohe Avraham, Elohe Yitzchak, Elohe Yaakov, right? He's the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. Okay. So, the Gemara now here is asking the following question. Why can't we add more adjectives when we say? You understand? Why don't we mention any more than just these, you know, that we have already mentioned, that we have actually in the Shmona Esrei itself? So they say, Mekanda Ela, from this point on, meaning from the time now that the order has finally been established, also Mesapir B'Shivchei Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is prohibited to literally to tell, but what they mean is to add more phrases extolling God, right? Praise of God. The Omer Rabbi Elmozer said, "My dechsir." What is the meaning of the pasuk? It's a pasuk in Tehillim that we say, "Mi yimaleu gevuras Hashem yashmia kol tilasay," which means literally, "Who can relate the mightiness of God? Who can proclaim all His praise?" So what does it mean? Who can proclaim all His praise? So it says, "The Mi Noer, the Maleo Gevuras Hashem, who is fit in order to, you know, to recite all the greatness of God, Lemisha Yochla Shmir Kot himself. It would be only one who is able to proclaim all his praise. Is there any human being who can ever proclaim all the praise that is worth, you know, that God deserves? The answer is no. None of us possess the knowledge or the vocabulary or anything like that in order to be able to do it. So that, therefore, what we're saying is that besides what we have in the Shmona Esrei, we do not add any more. This, as I said, it's based upon a Gemara in Brachas, where it's mentioned that a couple of people were asked to go up to the Ovid, you know, to Daven, as the Chassid, okay? One of them started in, and he Daven long. He kept on saying all the kinds of, you know, all kinds of praises, you understand? So he was cut short, eventually. And he said, how can you do that? I mean, based upon, as we said over here, can you really proclaim all the greatness of God? But rather, we have to say, you know, to stick to the text that was already ordained for us, and that's it, okay? as much as we have different phrases in the Bible which speak of these things that we mentioned, so that is the basis, but we can never do everything. For example, where do we find that? The answer is we find that in Sefer Shmos, when God revealed himself to Moshe Rabbeinu. That's when we find the phrase that God says, I am Ani Hashem, etc., etc., okay? And again, you know, the idea about God's greatness, Gibor, right, Dora, and so on. All right, well, we have that in various verses in the Bible, but not to start in the way we do, for example, on at the Haggadah, you know, the Seder night. Adihu, Baruchu, right? Godohu, Dogohu, Hodohu, Mosiku, etc., etc., etc. Okay? That's all right for that, but that's what Shmuel is. Okay? That's the idea. Some people even, you know, they begin cutting it, you know, instead of doing it three to every stanza. What do they do? They double up on stanzas. They say four or five at a time, and so on and so forth. But nevertheless, I mean, this is it. It's it. Okay. When it comes to Shmona Esrei, we stick to the text. Okay. Which doesn't mean, incidentally, that in the various Nuschos, the text is exactly identical. Those of you who are used to Davening Nusachari know that there are some differences of the wording in the Shmona Esrei as compared to the Nusach HaShinas. If you were a Jew who lived, let's say, you know, in the countries, the Arabic, the Muslim countries, what we call the Edot HaMizrach, in other words, the various Oriental communities, so-called, then the Nusach there is a little bit different too, as compared to what we have either in Nusach Svad, or Nusach Ari, or Nusach Ashkenaz, and there's another Nusach, and that is the Nusach that we have in the Spanish Portuguese, for example, which is not exactly identical either with Nusach Svad, okay? At least not the Nusach Svad that the Hasidim use, okay? But essentially, we're still saying the same thing. Occasionally we add another phrase or something like that, but essentially we're all reciting the same Shmona Esrei, okay? All right, now to get back. All right, so we see then that when it comes to the Ribbono Shel Olam, we have to be modest and chaste with our words, okay? Omer Rav Achanan, Omer Rav Yochanan, Amesapir B'Shivcha Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yosef Mendai Ne'ekam Olam. He carries one step further. He says if somebody keeps on praising the Ribbono Shel Olam more than is necessary, he is going to be uprooted from the world. Shene'emar, as the Pasuk says, Hayisupar lo ki adadir, imomar ish ki yivula. It's a Pasuk in the book of Job, which means, can it be told unto him when I speak? In other words, can I say all the necessary words when I'm addressing the Ribbono Shel Olam? And can any person say what has to be said without, for example, literally being swallowed up? Dorashab Yehuda Ishkfar Gibaraya. The following drasha was given by Yehuda, a man who lived in the village of Gibaraya, the Abelah, and there are some say that that wasn't the name of his town, but it was Ishkfar Gibar Chaya. Okay, in any case, he says, my dichsiv, what is the meaning of the pasuk that we have in Tehillim, which says, v'cha dumiyot tehila, which means literally, unto you, silence is praise. It's literally what it says. So he says, sama d'chula mashtuka, what he's saying is, it means that sama means, normally, of course, when we think of sun in the case as being, for example, it means literally a potion of medication. That's what it means. The word sam can sometimes mean, for example, sam chayim, right? The medication that contributes to life. And on the other hand, what would be a deadly medication?
Some others,
okay? So, what he's saying is that the medication, or the medicine, if you wish, sama d'chula, in other words, the best medicine in all cases is what? Mashtuka. Is, you know, shesika, in other words, silence. If you're silent, then in that particular case, nobody's going to take you for a fool, and you're certainly not going to get into trouble with what you have to say. Of course, there are times when you do have to speak up. There's no question about that. Okay, sometimes silence is not so... but nevertheless, there's many a time that we say things that we certainly have reason to regret subsequently that we said them, okay? Yes. Who said what? Oh, Lomot says he goes to Mr. Seeker, right. It's in the Pirkei Avos, right. Right, Rabbi Gamliel, right. Right, yeah. Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said, Kol Yomai Gadalti Min HaChachomim, right. All my life I've lived among the Chachomim, but Lomot says he goes to Mr. Seeker. But I never found anything better for a human being than silence, yeah. And then he says, "Lo ha-midrash ikar," right? And it's not the, you know, the drash that's important. Ela hamasa, the deeds are more important. Right. Okay. All right. Now, Kiyasa Rav Dimi, we've had him mentioned many times. Rav Dimi was a Babylonian scholar who loved to go to Eretz Yisrael, and always he would come back from Eretz Yisrael with teachings. So, well. Rav Dimi came back to Babylonia. Omar, he said, Amr Barava, they say literally in the West, which means in Eretz Israel, Mila Basela Mashtuka Betrain, which means that a word is worth a sela. Sela is, of course, a coin, right? And Mashtuka but silence is worth two. In other words, silence is worth more than than speech in this particular case, okay? This became a regular folk word, you know. That Mila Mesela, right? And usually say Shtika Betray, okay? But the thing over here says Mashtuka. But at any rate, it means silence, no question. Which person you have to silence, okay? So, now, we get back again to the Mishnah. What did the Mishnah have to say at the beginning of the chapter? Well, we learned various things. First thing that we learned is that when it comes to reading the Megillah, you're not allowed to read it in a topsy-turvy fashion, right? It's what we say, according to Mafreya Moyosa. If you read it topsy-turvy, let's say you read chapter 3, then decided to go back to chapter 1, then you should have hit chapter 5 and go back to 4 and things like that. If you do that, that's no reading of the Megillah. You're not Yosef. So that's the first thing that we learned, and that of course led to the discussion. And if you say the Shmona Esrei not in the proper order, right? Or if you say Hallel not in the proper order, then in that particular case you're not Yotze. You have not really fulfilled the obligation. You have to do it over again and do it the right way.
Not in the proper order.
Not in the proper order. All right. Like for example, in Hallel. Okay. Hallel is a collection of songs, right? Amar Dei Hashem. Betzeis Mitzrayim, Leilonu, and so on. Okay? Now, let's say you started with Betzeis Israel, and then you decided to go back to Halu Abdei Hashem. Okay? You understand? And then in that particular case, they're not Yotze. In other words, they have to go exactly in the order of the Sons in which they are there. Okay? So, this is what they had to say. Yes? That's a very, very good question. It is. It's a very good question. The answer is that yes, you should try to say it with the congregation where you can. It's particularly true where we had the responses to Hodol Hashem Kito. Okay, you know, which of course is the last psalm actually that we cite. You know, it's all part of that psalm. And then do the entire thing, starting from the beginning, go through it in order. This would be the best way. Okay?
I asked Rabbi Edelman the same question about slichos.
Yeah.
You can hop around
with slichos, it's not so. It's not. You can be more lenient, okay?
But Phil, yes. Even in the Hallel, you skip some of them on certain.
This is correct. That's due to a different reason, okay? We learned in the Gemara in Brachas that Rav, the great Babylonian scholar, he came back from Eretz Yisrael to study, and he came into a community where he discovered that they were skipping sections. So at first he was offended by it, but then he decided there has to be a reason for it, and since that's the one minhag, so they do it. All right, so when do we do it? We do it on Rosh Chodesh. But we also do it after the first day of Pesach. For Eretz Yisrael, it's beginning with the second day. For us, it's beginning with the third day, okay? No, for Pesach, there's a different reason why we skip. For Pesach, it's written that the picture Malachei Hashoreis Lebashira, that the heavenly hosts, the angels, wanted to recite songs of praise at the time when the Egyptians were drowning in the Red Sea, which was on Shri Yishon Pesach, the seventh day of Pesach. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to them, nothing doing, you said. In other words, the works of my hands, in other words, human beings, I fashioned them, and they are drowning in the sea, and you want to sing songs of praise? So it's positive. Well, since we omit it on the seventh day of Pesach, why can we say that Chalamed is more important? Obviously, Chalamed is less important because the seventh day is the Mikra Kodesh, whereas Chalamed is an intermediate thing, so that therefore begin with Chalamed, we say only what we call half Hallel. It's not really half, but you know, we skip to the beginning of two of the songs over there. This is what it works out. Yeah. So it may be that Rosh Chodesh too, because it falls into the same kind of a category, that inasmuch for the seventh day of Pesach we're already doing that, so how can we say that Rosh Chodesh is more important? But I'm not sure of that. The reason why? Because the Gemara doesn't mention that that would be the reason. And there's another reason why also I don't quite believe that that's it. Namely, why do we say Hallel, full Hallel, during Hanukkah? We can't say that Hanukkah is more important than the Chalamed, for example. Obviously it's not. We can't even say that Hanukkah is more important than Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh is, after all, it's biblical. Hanukkah is post-biblical. So how can we say that the post-biblical is more important? So the Gemara gives a different explanation. It says that for Nes, which happened in Eretz Yisrael, a miracle which occurred in Eretz Yisrael, for that we say a full Hallel. Whereas for a miracle which occurred outside of Eretz Yisrael, namely the miracle of Purim, so then we do not say Hallel, period. Okay? That's the explanation that they give over there. And then, of course, you know, many of our scholars came along and they said, well, there is an equivalent on Purim to the Hallel. We don't actually say the Hallel, but what is the Hallel that we do recite? It's the reading of the Megillah and the recital of Al-Hadithim. Right. So that's the Purim version of the Hallel. Okay? All right, so getting back to our text over here. All right. Maybe I should be silent.
No, we need you to speak. Otherwise, we don't want to wait.
All right. The next thing that is said, okay, is Kara Alpan. What happens if a person reads the Megillah by heart? He has the text so memorized that he doesn't even look at the Megillah, but instead he reads the Megillah by heart, right? So the Mishnah says, well, yes, he's not fulfilled the obligation. Because what do you have to do? You have to read the Megillah from a text. You can't simply recite it by heart, right? Okay. I'll say so. Next. Manalo. Gemara wants to know, where does this come from? So Omar Rava. So Rava said, Atsya Zechira Zechira. He says, we learn it by comparing two different situations in which remembering is found. Remember, Zechira, remembering, okay? What are the two different relations? So he says, Ksiv Hocha, it is written here, meaning, of course, the Megillas Esther, because remember, we're dealing with Purim, this is the subject, right? In the Megillah, we find the Hayomim Ha'ele, these days, Nizkorim, are to be remembered, okay? Uksiv Hasam, and then we have another verse, and this goes back, of course, to the Torah, the end of Pishalach, where we have the story about the attack of Amalek. And what happened after the defeat of Amalek in the days of Moshe and Yeshua? It's written, Kesov Zozikarom Basefer. Write this down for a memorial, in other words, to keep the memory alive, in a book. Well, if it says Malahalam Basefer, just as the memory of the defeat of Amalek has to be found in the book, in other words, when do you have to say it? You have to say it from a book, you understand? So Afkan Basefer. So here too, in the case of the Megillah, it has to be done from a text. Based, of course, upon Malahalam Basefer, that over there, all right, we actually read that passage of Amalek, Purim morning, that's the Kriyas HaTorah. However, we have another reading in which we mention Amalek, and that, of course, is always the Shabbos prior to Purim. We call that Parsha Zohar, because what do? We read a passage taken from the end of Parsha Kisei, in the book of the Devarim, in which we say, Zachoris Asher Asodacha Amalek, remember what Amalek did unto you. And then at the end it says, Lo Tishkach, do not forget. All right, that's beginning and the end of that particular passage that we read. Now, from this we derive the fact that it is a mitzvah from the Torah to read Parsha Zohar. So we try to encourage every man, woman, and child, you know, to come to the shul in order to hear at least this passage from the Torah. All right, so just as that has to be done from the Sefer Torah, so likewise, the remembrance of the miracle of Purim has to also be from a text, and that's what's the text. The text is the text of the Megillah. This is how he derives it. Okay? Now the Gemara, however, asks the following question. How do you know the high Zechira Kriyahi? How do we know that here remembering means reading? And not simply, let's say, you know, I remember, oh yeah, I remember, you know, thinking about it, you remember something. So how do we know that it doesn't mean remembering simply in, you know, just in our mind, in our heart, literally, okay? So he says, why the high Zechira Kriya? He says, Dilma, maybe it says, Iyum Bialma, maybe it means simply, let's say, thinking about it, you know, in general. So he says, Los Hakodate, no, Gemara says. That's not the way you have to understand it. Why? It's written Zohar, right? It is written remember. Yochob Alev. Shall we say that it means to remember simply in your heart, in other words, in your mind, right? So, Kishahu Omer Lo Tishkach, when the Bible then says, do not forget, Are Shichchas Halevamu. There we are referring specifically to forgetfulness of the heart, of the mind, you understand? So that therefore the remembrance of it has to be something else. Therefore, what am I going to do with the idea of Zachar? The answer is Bapeh. You have to remember it by actually saying it. And what is the saying? Of course, it is the reading of the Megillah. Okay? Now we come into a new area, which was hinted at before. It says Kara'a Targum. Remember, we had a discussion about that already before. But the Mishnah here says Kara'a Targum. If a person read the Megillah in a translation, right, lo yotza, he has not fulfilled the obligation of reading the Megillah. So he says, Heichidami, says Gemara. What do you mean? How does this work out? Ilema, if we say Dichsiva, Mikra, the Korino Targum, if we say that a person has what kind of a text in front of him? He has the regular Hebrew text in front of him, okay? But what does he say when he says it aloud? He says Targum, right? He says the Aramaic translation. Then in that case, it says Hainu Alpeh. So this is the same as saying that he's reading the Megillah how? By rote, by heart, right? So, and what did we say before? We said that, the Mishnah says, you know, that the right, you did not fulfill it. You have to read it from a text, right? Not by heart. So he says, let's richa, when do we need this teaching? We need a dichsiva targum, a korino targum. If it was actually written in the Aramaic translation, that's the way the Megillah was written, and the person read it from the Aramaic translation. The question is, that in that case, would he be Yotzei or not with the reading of that? Because if you remember, we have the Rishonim which say that if he reads, let's say, you know, Laz Lomay of Laz, it's right, in other words, a person who knows a foreign language only, and he reads the Megillah written in the foreign language, then in that particular case he would be Yotzei. So there's, as we can see already, a contradiction that's involved over here. Obviously, you can't have both. You can't say that, you know, you can read a Megillah written in, let's say, French, if you speak French, right? Or written in Chinese, if you understand Chinese, or something like that. Because that's not the way it's done. But we did mention one language that didn't meet with approval. Does anybody remember which one?
Greek.
It was Greek, right? Greek. Okay, so this is going to be reviewed again. All right. So, obviously, this is a contradiction with the next part of the mission, which says, well, Korin Oson and Lazis, and the Lazos, the Laz, right? That you can read it to people who speak a foreign language in their language. So the Gemara says, well, Amrit Kura Becholoshon Leyotso, didn't you say a few moments ago, another teaching, another Baraisa, which says that if you read it in any language other than Hebrew, right, you haven't fulfilled it. So, obviously, there's a big contradiction between us. So, Rav and Shmuel, normally, usually they have different interpretations, right, but in this particular case, the Amrei Tarvayhu, the Laz Yevani. So, both of them are in agreement that when it says the Laz, it means only Greek. If they wrote a Megillah in Greek and read it in Greek, then in that case it would be Yosef. Okay?
What's the Hebrew word for Greek?
Yevodi. Yevodi, Yevodis, right.
Yeah. Why is that?
Why is that? We had before, towards the end of the first chapter, I mentioned the fact that Greek had a special role, namely, this was the language that they dealt with the, you know, the foreign government that ruled over Israel, okay? They used Greek. And Miel, so on, Shimon ben Amiel, and so on, they were all scholars of Greek because that way they could converse and carry on affairs of state.
What's that have to do with the Megillah, though?
Okay, it's a good question. The answer is that there were probably Greek speaking Jews. It was this we know in Alexandria. Definitely there was a big community. At one time they estimated there were 1 million Jews living in Alexandria. Tremendous population, okay? Of course, as a result of persecutions, you know, that was the end of the Alexandrian community. But at one time, when things were peaceful, you know, well, I don't know about yeshivas, but they certainly had schools, because we have writings from the Alexandrian period. I mean, one time, it's true. Alexandria had the biggest library in the ancient world. Correct. Okay. Yeah, Philo, of course. Yeah. Absolutely. Right. So we have quite a bit of writing, you know, by Philo. We have. Of course, Josephus also wrote Greek and stuff.
Everything in there must have been at school.
You know, the antiquities and the other works of Josephus, the wars and so on, that he wrote in Greek also. Because even the Romans, after all, I mean, for military affairs and the government, you know, you would suppose, you know, that Latin was the important language. But nevertheless, the high class, the upper class Romans, prided themselves upon it's in the year 2002. Okay. Tonight is the beginning of the 27th of the month of Iyar. Tonight we counted the 42nd night in the counting of the Omer. Okay. And we are now.
Right. Next Thursday.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Next Thursday.
Next Thursday, exactly. Yeah. We have one more week to go in the Omer count. Right. And, right. Okay.
42
and 7
would be
49. Right. Okay. And of course, Shavuos is the 50th. Shavuos is the 50th. Right. Right. Okay, hopefully my machine is working over here. I see it turning, so I guess it's still alright. Okay. We are now on Yud Ches Amud Aleph, continuing from where we left off last week. And the last thing that we discussed was the fact that, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, if a Megillah were written in Greek and read for Greek-speaking Jews who speak only Greek, then that would be kosher. But in any other language, as we learned, such a Megillah would not be kosher. It should only be in Hebrew. And this is the point that we start with tonight, where it says, okay, I'll tell you where we are first of all. Yeah. Okay, we are, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, okay.
On the bottom.
On the 10th line from the bottom, we start now from the Halloween Sheshama. The Halloween Sheshama. Okay.
That ruling that you just talked about has to do with public reading for the congregation.
Yes, correct. We're not talking about somebody, or even, I'll tell you something. It can also be for an individual who wants this way in order to fulfill his obligations of the Megillah. You understand? Let's say a person is the only person living in the town, okay?
Yeah.
Okay? And he has, you know, and he wants to fulfill the mitzvah of reading the Megillah.
Right.
And he's Greek speaking, right? He's Greek speaking. That's the only language he can speak.
Yeah.
And he has the Megillah, which was written in Greek. So in that particular case, he would be Yosef with that, okay? But anybody else would not be Yosef, unless, as I say, only in a Greek speaking community, and a Megillah which is written only in Greek. Now, of course, none of us have at this particular point the Megillah written in Greek, because, as we'll see in a minute, even in Hebrew there are problems with the reading of the Megillah. And this is the point that we started with. Okay. All right. We are referring again to the Mishnah that we had on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, where it speaks about, you know, have you fulfilled the obligation or have you not fulfilled the obligation? For example, we learned that if you read the Megillah in the wrong way, then it's, you know, chapter 1, chapter 10, chapter 5, chapter, so it's no good, okay? And we'll see tonight the questions about if you read and you pause a while and then you read again and so forth, you know, what is the ruling, is that as far as that's concerned? Or if you chap a dribble in between? And what would be the definition of that? So, okay. Then later on, if we get to it, I hope, what materials
That's what we're going to have to be written with. Okay. All right. So, tonight, we start with where it says the Halaways. Now, who is the Halaways? The Halaways is a person who speaks a language other than Hebrew. Right. If you'll take a look in Rashi's commentary again and again and again, when he wants to explain a Hebrew term, whether it's in the Torah or whether it's in the Gemara, okay, and he wants to give a French equivalent so that the people to whom he was writing at that particular time would understand, so he says, Ubelaz. What is Ubelaz? Yes. Ubelaz means, in this particular case, you know, and in the foreign language, the language other than Hebrew, what is the word, and so on, okay?
Well, in other words, in his case, it would be a French word.
In his case, it would be French, right. So, you know, Laz could be any language other than, right, other than the Hebrew. Okay.
Yeah. It's a Hebrew word.
What, Laz? Yeah, yeah. Of course, in time of the Gemara, the word Laz also assumed another meaning. You know, words can change their meaning as well. Pardon me?
Is it an unusual word for Hebrew?
No.
It doesn't have a Hebrew sound to it.
No, it is. It's a Hebrew word, right. You know, the Hebrew language has words that go back to the Bible, Hebrew words that go back to the time of the Mishnah, Hebrew words that go in the Middle Ages, and so on and so forth. Right. I mean, you have all kinds of different layers, and of course, modern Hebrew has added a brand new vocabulary as well. they weren't happy all the time with the old one. They wanted to make distinctions between one thing and another. So, they created new words. Of course, as much as possible, they tried to create new words on the basis of Hebrew roots, but in other cases they did. For example, normally the word for government is memshalah. No, it goes back to the Bible. It's like memshal techo b'chol dor v'dor, right? Which means, you know, your rule, or Lord, you know, is in every single generation. God is our ruler throughout the generations, okay? But so Memshal became a government. Now they wanted to say an administration, so they created words, you know, like Mimshal, you understand? Or Minhal from the root Nahal, and Nahal to lead, and something, and so on and forth. All right. Then, of course, well, there are other things. That's, for example, Televizia.
Yes.
Which is a good Hebrew word now. Okay. Yeah. Or the Talpain. What is the Talpain? The telephone. From the word telephone. Okay. I mean, a telephone. So you need a verb for telephone too. You could say Mitzalzel to give somebody a ring instead. Because Mitzalzel means to ring a bell, literally.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But, all right. So, later on, the word Laz in Hebrew came to mean also, for example, a defamation of character. We speak about a motzi laz on somebody or other. In other words, you make accusations, false accusations against somebody in order to wound their character. Understand? So the word laz is used in that case. However, when Rashi used the word laz, he used it in the sense of, and what is the translation in French that people are familiar with? Okay? All right. So, Halaways is a person then who speaks a language other than Hebrew. Sheshama Ashuris. Now over here, Ashuris doesn't mean Assyrian, the original meaning, but Ashuris means who heard it in the Hebrew from the traditional Hebrew text. This is what the word means over here. So he says, in the Mishnah it says, Yotza. In other words, he has fulfilled his obligation. So now the Gemara asks a very logical question. It says, Ola Yoda by Kamre. He says, but look, the person who doesn't know Hebrew, and he listens to the Megillah, he doesn't know what they're saying. So they say, Midi Dahaga, all right, they say, you can compare it to Anoshim Yameho Oretz, to women, and also to people who, you know, are Ameho Oretz, in other words, they're a little ignorant.
I'm glad they put it
it's an aspersion upon women, but you have to realize the basic reason why they said it. It was because women did not have the formal education that boys had. I mean, this is what it amounted to, you see. So, you know, thank God our attitudes have changed about these things, okay? And even, I mean, you know, in Europe, where, let's say, a couple of generations ago, women did not have the benefit of modern Hebrew training or something like that, because that movement began roughly about the 1920s or something like that, okay? But nevertheless, you had a Teich Chumash, right? You had, for prayers, you had also Tchinas written in Yiddish and things like that and so on. So, yeah, so that if they were familiar with Yiddish, they still had translations that they could follow and all kinds of prayers that they could recite and so on and so forth. So, it wasn't that they grew up in ignorance, but, you know, they did not receive any formal education. So, obviously, if they spoke a language other than Hebrew, and they never had any formal education in Hebrew, and they hear it in Hebrew, so the question is, are they Yotzei or not? You see, this is what the question is over here. So the answer is, yes, they are Yotzei, if they hear it in the original Hebrew text, okay? Matzif le Rabina. So Rabina didn't like the idea, okay? He says, Atu anan ha-hashtranim b'nehem ha-chemi yadinan. He says, you know, if the argument is based, hi Saul, how are you? It's good to see you. If the argument is based upon the fact that, you know, okay, certain groups of people who don't speak the language of Hebrew, they don't understand it, but nevertheless, you know, we say, okay, could be Yotzei. But he says, even we who know Hebrew, we are Talmidei Chachamim, do we really know the meaning of each and every word that we have in the Megillah? And he gives an example. He says, you have, for example, a phrase, you know, that says that Ahasuerus sent these letters, right? The letters, you know, informing the Jewish communities, you know, first of all, you know, the first informing the goyim to kill the Jews on the 13th of Adar, subsequently, you know, that the Jews were permitted to defend themselves, etc., etc. And they sent them on Achashronim B'nei HaRamochim, which they translate usually as something like the dromedaries, young dromedary camels or something like that. But we don't really know what Achashronim B'nei HaRamochim. So even great scholars of the Hebrew language, do we understand each and every single word, right? Ela says, but why do we read them again? He says, mitzvah's kriya fruits of inisa. The mitzvah is to read them again and also to celebrate the miracle that took place. And the pirsuma means, you know, in public to celebrate it so that, is, that the multitude should know about the miracle, right? This is why it's literally in Hebrew today, pirsum, or a new derivative, pirsumas, means publicity and things like that. Because publicized the miracle, okay? So, Ochanami, so likewise over here, mitzvah's kriya for Savinisa. This is the idea of the mitzvah. You read it, and you celebrate the miracle, and proclaim it, and let everybody know about it. And obviously, if you read the Megillah, first of all, you're doing it in the festive area, right? I mean, people that know, they get together because they know that the time has come to hear the story of the Megillah, to the Klap Hominin and things like that, although that was considered a somewhat later a custom that arose and so on, okay? But nevertheless, the idea is to celebrate the miracle. Okay, so that therefore, read it in Hebrew and everybody is yotzei with it. And this is the halacha part of
it doesn't say it there.
Yeah.
But, customarily, we listen in Hebrew and we're reading English along with it.
Yeah, you want to be able, exactly. You're hearing it, and at the same time, you're following what you're reading. Right, that's correct.
Not only are you understanding it, but you're learning. Learning the
meaning of the absolutely. I still remember how thrilled I was when I was a boy, and at that time I got my first set of Masorah. This is, I must have been maybe, I don't know, 10, 11 years old or something like that at that time. And, you know, I read Ashrei Yoshrei Resecha. Okay. We all are familiar with that one. Happy are they who dwell in their house. And I knew then that the word Ashrei means happy.
Yeah.
Of course, happy in the sense more like fortunate or something like the fortunate or anything. Yeah. But the root is right, yeah. And subsequently, Siddur were published where you had, let's say, word by word, line by line, and so on, you know, you phrase it. And they still continue to do it to this day. Yeah. Chumashim, you know, we have several sets of Chumashim where it goes word by word, line by line, and so on. Linear translations, right. Yeah.
They came up with Pirkei Avos. For the space of
it.
Just underlining translation.
Right.
You read in English, but.
No, correct. Art Scroll today has put out a lot of things in Intimity. You know, the Tillum is one of their examples. That's correct. Okay. Then the Mishnah said, Kerea Se Rugin, Yotza. If he read it, and the word is Se Rugin, so he's fulfilled his obligation. No, Mela. So, of course, what's the problem? No, Hava Yadar Abad and Ma Se Rugin. The great rabbis did not know what is the meaning of the word Se Rugin. they had a tradition, right, that if you read it, say Rugin, but they didn't know what the word meant. Okay, so Shema'uha le'amso d'nei rabbi. So they heard the maidservant, the maidservant, whatever, of Rabbi's household. She scolded the rabbi. She said to them, the Haba Island Paski, they were coming in groups, and then another group, and then another group to the Rebbe, into Rebbe's house. And she said to them, how long are you going to continue to come in? First one group, then another group, and so on. So, in other words, what is the meaning of Se Rugin over here? The meaning is, you read a little while. Pause. After that, you read again. Right? Another. Then there's again, there's a pause, a break, whatever. Then you read a little bit again, and so on. So the point is, as long as you do it from beginning to end, I mean, this is what we'll discover, that the halacha should be that if you pause in between, so you're yotzei with it.
Isn't there a custom that you have to read it as fast as you possibly can?
Gewalt. That custom exists only because people are in a rush to get out.
They're fasting and they're hungry.
They brag about how fast they can say it.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's true. I mean, that for example, you know, if you're coming in right on top of Titus Esther, which is what the situation is in most years, then in that case, you're going to be hungry by the time you get to Megillah. So that's one, right. And Shvach, absolutely, no question. And in the morning, you always have, you know, the people are urging, fast, fast, tomorrow, we got to get out of here, right? So even though we start at 6:30 in the morning, but still, there are people who, you know, as the magic hour occurs when they're used to, they want to get out, period. So that's the reason why it's not a mitzvah. But it's a fact, what shall I say? It's a fact, okay. All right. So, as a result, by listening to Rebbe's dinst, right? Dinst. So they were able.
The same word, Yiddish.
Yeah, I'm using a Yiddish word.
It's a German word.
Right. Yeah, that's the German word. Right.
I remember there was another word.
What's the German word?
Yes. Yes. Right. There's this section over here. Yeah. We had it also in Gemara and Rosh Hashanah. Right. So we've seen it once before. But they quote it over here too. Right. Dinstag? Yeah, that's Tuesday. Right. Yeah. But that's named for a different one. That's named for one of their gods, you know, Odin or something like that. Yeah. So. Because the days of the week, you know, are really named after the sun, right? Sun, day, moon, day, right? You understand, right? Yeah. Tyr is a Scandinavian version of the same thing, and Lazegetus, you know. They threw him all the other days over.
In Russian, do you know how Sunday is? If you translate from Russian into English, it would be resurrection.
Oh, yeah, that's based on, right.
Like resurrection.
Yeah, right.
What is it, Sunday? What do you say? How do you say it?
In Russian, the word for Sunday is
like an English resurrection.
Right,
not
right.
In Russian.
From cross.
Yeah, right, right, of course. It's a religious symbolism. To me, the wonder is only that in so many languages, Shabbos remains Sabado and
Sobota,
right, and even then they had groups of Christians who were called Soboticus. Right, right. All right, but the days of the week, and you notice in the foreign languages, whereas Hebrew avoids it completely. It's Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, and so on and so forth. Okay. Except for Shabbat, the only name that we have for a day in the week. Okay. All right, so, another story about the same situation. Okay. Lo ha'viyada rabbanon, the rabbis didn't know my chaloglugos. It happens to be a name of a plant, okay? Chaloglugos, okay? Let your voice, let your tongue trip over this word, all right? Chaloglugos. So, at any rate, Shabur Elam saw the name. So, again, they heard, the maid of the Rebbe's household, the owner of the Hugava, she said to a certain man, the Halakam of Avid Parchine, who happened to be scattering the seeds of Parchine, Parchine, she said, Ad Masaya Kamefaze Chaluglugocha. How long are you going to keep on spreading your Chaluglug? Okay? So, the point is that they knew what the parchina was in our, the Aramaic language. It's a plant. I know that he uses the translation purslin, whatever that is. Someone said, "This is what purslin is." I've seen others. I have seen what did I see once? Not anemone. Something about it, I don't know. But anyway,
it's a fast spreading plant.
Obviously, it is right, and he was scattering the seed over there. So she used the word, and then they knew, what the reference was to. Okay? Shabu and Ab said to the Rebbe, and again, they heard the dinst in the Rebbe's household. The Rebbe de Lahu Gafra, I said that already. All right. Lohav Yadu Rabbanit, my salts and leho, usarom and mecha. This happens to be a verse in the book of Proverbs. Okay? And so what is Saltzaleha? That's what they didn't know. So Shamruha, the Amsa, the Rebbe, so they heard again the maidservant of the Rebbe's household. The Havas Omra, the Ahu Gavro, she said to a certain man, the Havas Mahapech Bemazye, who was turning literally his hair. In other words, he was, turning, twisting his hairs. And Omra, so she said, I'm only going to continue playing around with your hair over there, curling them and so on. So the question is then, so what is the meaning? Saltzaleha. Saltzaleha. So therefore, getting back to Mishnah, now they understood that what the Saltzaleha is from Mecca means that to take the words of Torah, or the words of wisdom, and you keep on playing again, again, again with it, it will extol you. In other words, you'll be lifted, you'll be extolled by the constant dealing with the words of Torah. Okay? Okay. It's a pasuk in Tehillim which says, cast upon the Lord Yehavcha. They didn't know what the word Yahav is, okay? Matter of fact, I remember we had a kid over here not too long ago, the son of an Israeli, his name was Yahav. I don't know if you remember.
No.
One of our teachers made that about 2-3 years ago. Yeah. All right. At any rate, they didn't know, what is the meaning of the word Yahavcha. So Rabbi Baruchana said, Zimnechane, Hava Zimne Bahadeh Ahutaya. So in this case, it's not in the maids, but he said, I was going along, I was walking along with a certain Arab, Tayobiyah means an Arab. The Arab wanders from place to place. So it's like, sort of like a Bedouin, I guess. They call it Darina Tunan. You know what I was doing? I was schlepping a burden. The Yom Ali, so he said to me, Shekar Yehavich, all right, lift up your burden, the Shadi Agmalai, and throw it upon my camel. On my camel, right. Yeah, Gamal, right. Throw it upon my camel. So they knew then that what does Yahav mean? It means burden. So in other words, when the Psalm says, you know, Hashem Hashem Yahavcho, means cast your burden upon the Lord. And the rest of the passage says, Hu Yechal Kanecha, and he will sustain you. Okay? So they learned the meaning of the word. You see, you can learn from everybody, right? This is what it says in Pirkei Avos, Mikol Melamda Yitzkalti, right? This is a Chocham, who can say, I learned from everybody who had something to teach me. Yeah. All right? Lo haliyadu rabbanu mai v'tisehu b'matate hashmeid. It's a pasuk in Yeshayahu. So they didn't understand what is the meaning of tisehu b'matate, right, of destruction. Hashmeid they knew. So shma'u halam, said to the rabbi, so again they heard the din's the rabbi's household. The halasem et chadeto, she said to the other woman over there in the house, Shikuri tatisa v'tati besa, grab the broom and sweep the house. So they knew now that what is the word litate, it means to sweep. What is a batate? It's a broom. And this is the word that we use them on the Hebrew.
How come the maid said knew all these translations and the rest
of it? Okay, you ask a very good question. The answer is that as time went on, in many households, people were speaking Arabic, people were speaking Greek, maybe, not to the same extent, but Arabic certainly they were speaking, okay? And people without education did not speak Hebrew. Hebrew was studied as a language. You know, Lashon Kodesh, you get the idea? I mean, the picture that we used to say, you know, that you study Lashon Kodesh, but you don't speak it, you know. You have some Hasidim to this day who, you know, they still hold this as a principle that when you talk, normal talk, you use Yiddish. But when you're praying or something like that, then you use Lashon Kodesh. Right, right. It's a holy language, therefore not to be used for any profane use. Although I have to tell you, there was Israel, plenty of Hasidim. Even if they speak Yiddish, they also speak Hebrew very well. Modern times. I know after I came back over here, I gave a Devar Torah to Shalom Spindkin. I pointed out, you know, that times are changing. That even people who theoretically have no connection with the government, nevertheless, they're making use of Israeli money. They ride on Israeli buses and things like that. And, you know, and as I say, they talk Hebrew. They can talk Hebrew, they talk Yiddish. There's nobody who speaks only Yiddish these days over there in Israel.
I was shocked when I was in Israel about the, for me, like foreigners speaking like few languages, not
native. Right.
When I treat Hebrew as a Lashon Kodesh, and when you see a bank called Mishkan, which is,
it's not Mishkan, it's Mashkan. Mashkan means
Mashkan.
A mortgage. No,
I read it in the bottom of the organization. Okay. I
but Mashkan is a mortgage. Or they use the Aramaic form of it, Mashkanta.
Right.
Yeah, how much is the Mashkanta, how much mortgage are you carrying? Okay. The mashkon is what the bank lends you, but the mashkanta is the burden that you have to pay.
That's
okay.
So interesting. You've got the same root.
Right,
like
exactly.
Vowels.
Right,
so
because Aramaic is a language which was related to Hebrew.
Very much so.
Yeah, right. Most of the words, you can see a similarity between the two. Here and there you have words that are peculiar only to Aramaic.
Mashkan,
right. Okay. So, all right, anyway, the point of the story is that now we know what is Serugin. Serugin means a little bit of time, then a little bit of time, a little bit of time, this is Serugin. Okay? Okay. So now, question is, all right, the Mishnah said what? Kamara say Mugin Yotza, right? In other words, if he read it in a little at a time, so he has fulfilled it, right? This is the thing that we're now discussing. Therefore, on the next page, we continue. Your curse for the days. Yeah, we have copies of it over here. Pass it for those who need it, please. Need more? I have more. There's a blank page?
There's a blank in my
No, husband. No, no.
Why are you
the back is blank.
Yeah, I turned it on the back.
Is
the old one?
Yeah, it's not blank.
All right.
Over here, you mean?
Yes.
No. No,
okay.
You're on the wrong page,
then. Why on the wrong page? I'm listening.
Well, you're listening, but you'll be on 18B1.
We're now on the next page.
18B1.
Your class, public base, 18B.
Oh, 18B.
Yes.
You
graduated from 18A to 18B.
I just told you that.
I was following certain words.
Okay.
I would, so we said,
may I have your attention again, please? And so say, Rugin Yotza, right? But this page begins by saying, say, Rusin Loyotza. All right, so, of course, the question is, but what is say, Rusin? So, say, Rusin means the same as the Mafia that we had in the Mishnah, meaning if you read it in an upside-down order, okay? Well, you didn't read it, you know, in succession, but topsy-turvy, okay? This is what say, Rusin means.
They wouldn't use the word topsy-turvy.